Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza.
Hello.
Hello.
We're your primary selection team here at Cattle. Today's pod is feeling pretty seasonal. We were thinking fall reads, some creepy reads with a nod to Halloween. That's sort of around about where we are.
Yeah.
So how are you both doing?
I'm okay.
Yes. See, this is the way a lot of conversations are going with people lately.
Yeah, we don't want to reveal the true curtain inside, but...
Yeah. This is the last sunny day before a stretch of gray. So I'm preparing myself to walk later.
That is nice.
Committing to. Yeah. Cause it's the gray Michigan time path descended and here we are. So. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking that we're talking. I have that association sort of with the gray with fall.
Yeah.
You know, this, it just made me laugh that this is like, I have sun shining in on me where I'm sitting right now.
Yeah. We've had some great weather lately. So
we have. September was glorious. October, kind of like, I feel like the gray is creeping in and it's just like, yeah, it's a mark of like something different, you know, there's so much going on. That's kind of mixing together. It's like, okay, we're in this new season and how are we gonna approach this one?
It's yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Continuing to adapt as things go on.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But that's that sort of spawned some of our conversation. That we're like, what is a fall read really to you? I mean, are there things that you listen to or read or go back to in the fall?
And I'm wondering, our listeners, you know, are there certain genres that only appeal in the fall? Is it, you know, is it Halloween type cozies or horror, or, you know, running away from that and going towards, you know, really light things to like the feeling, or just lots of cookbooks and baking again, turning on the oven again. You know, there's just so many different ways to go. I know I'm always sort of drawn to, my reading does change in the fall. And right now I'm really drawn to thinking about places where the climate is sort of gray and rainy. Like Connemara, Ireland, books about Ireland, even videos about that, just different locales where the setting is almost a character in the book. That's what I'm really drawn to at this time.
Yeah. I have to say that for me, it's really like those beautiful picture books with awesome illustrations about, you know, the colors of the season. I mean, it happens with every season, but you just notice all the JEs or the picture books in our collection have a ton of holds on them. And this year, I don't really feel like I have that many new titles to pick from, and hopefully that will change soon. We still have some in the queue that are waiting to be received, but... Yeah, that's what I think of is just, this week and last week in particular, the outside was just glorious with all the colors. And I love seeing some of those colors and stories reflected in picture books.
I can see that. I tend to personally, we'll get into this a little bit more. I'm not really a horror reader per se, but I do think of sort of that gothic feel. And a lot of the books, wherever they're set, I just sort of associate with fall because of the sort of a slightly gray feel to them, or the atmospheric feel of some of the titles draw me in. Are there some books that you're thinking of with that fall feeling right now?
I actually have one that I won't talk about because I haven't read it yet, but it was a book that we looked at together, Jessica, when it first came in as an ARC. It's called The Bell in the Lake by Lars Mitting. And it's actually set in the late 1800s. And it's about a stave church in this town, this woman who really wants to save this Norwegian stave church. And it just looks very atmospheric. I mean, the cover is almost like foreboding, but I've read some really good reviews about it. And that definitely gives me that kind of, it's like a heavier cloud, you know, in the setting, kind of feeling to it. Yeah. How about you both?
You know, for me, I've just, you know, I'm thinking a lot about, you know, the feelings that people are experiencing right now in this season. So when I read Leaf in the Fall, this is a picture book by Allison Sweet Grant. It really hit home because it is a picture book. So I'm sure some of you will be like, well, how could that really relate? But it's actually about a leaf spelled L-E-I-F. That's his name, the leaf. And he's trying to figure out all these ways to like stop from falling off the tree. But really it's a story about, you know, trying so hard and still failing. And then at the end of the story, he's, you know, you find out that, hey, all my failures actually turned out to be a good thing because it worked out great for me. And I just think about this season, like particularly because we are experiencing COVID still, and people who are just trying so many different ways to accomplish their work or accomplish school schedules for their kids.
Right.
And we just have this, you know, intense sense of like, you gotta do everything you can to still excel when this is just a really weird time. And I really enjoyed the story because in addition, the illustrator, Marilee Lydiard, I think it is her name. She just did a beautiful job of just showing all the colors. And I have to say that there were other leaves on the trees that were like, their big refrain is something like, you're wasting your time. All the leaves fall in the fall. You know, it's just so funny. Really cute book.
Sounds good.
So for me, it is kind of going in that gothic direction. So like a couple of things that have really appealed to me. I kind of hinted at Piranesi by Susanna Clarke in a few earlier podcasts I'd gotten the ARC. And it's a wonderful book. Susanna Clarke wrote Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell years ago. And this book, Piranesi, you're introduced, it's sort of a grand old labyrinthine house that Piranesi is an explorer within. And we're talking about an otherworldly house. This is endless corridors, thousands of giant statues. There's an ocean within the walls. He's exploring and mapping this grand other place. And he's learned to thrive. But as you go through the book, you start to realize there's much more going on. It's sort of his truce begins to unravel as the story goes along. And it's a kind of chilling, kind of fantastic mystery. There's a creepy edge to it. It's for any fans of Aaron Morgenstern. It's almost like if you read The Starless Sea, it could be kind of set in the same place only 100 years later or something like that. There's a lot of, it's sort of that gothic, weird, creepy, interesting story that I tend to be drawn to. You know, anybody who liked Aaron Morgenstern, anybody who likes Alex E. Harrow, I should run for this one. Another one I picked up, one of the Tor novellas, there's a book called Flyaway by Kathleen Jennings. It's part gothic thriller and part fairy tale.
Ooh.
And in it, a young woman starts to question her memories when she gets a letter in the mail from one of her brothers who've been missing she doesn't even kind of know how long. She just knows they're not there and she doesn't remember quite why and she doesn't quite know what's going on. And it starts to sort of quest to find the truth. And it's set sort of in a small town in West Queensland, Australia. And it's just kind of a creepy and lovely little mystery that takes a kind of, it very much feels like something, while it's set sort of in a contemporary period, it has the feel of maybe Mary Shelley or not quite Jane Eyre, but those it more of a more of the mad scientist bent side to it. But it's if people who like Kelly Link or Karen Russell or Seanan McGuire, this is one of those. It's just a nicely put together little story.
Sounds good.
Yeah. What else? What else are we thinking of? Should we go into Halloween or?
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't usually read horror. Although I will give a very quick shout out to the Mr. Shivers series by Max Brallier, I'm not sure how I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but last year he had Beneath the Bed and Other Scary Stories. Well, there's a second one now. It's called Shadow in the Woods and Other Scary Stories. And these are ERs, or what we call early readers. You can find them in our cattle collection under the call number of ER. And this is part of the Acorn Readers series by Scholastic. And these books are designed to, you know, for kids ages 4 to 7. So those who are, you know, just getting their reading feet firmly established. And this last year's book that I reviewed, Beneath the Bed and Other Scores, was just so fun. It's just, I mean, that's my kind of horror. they're light.
Yeah.
There's usually something funny. So I don't think a 5-year-old would be creeped out. I mean, hopefully they wouldn't. Maybe the title would kind of give them pause, but I really love these stories. I have not had a chance to read the second one, which has already been released. We don't have it in our building yet. We do have it in digital, which I'm still waiting for. But yeah, I just want to give a quick shout out to those. And they feature like notable authors. I mentioned Max Brallier, Dave Pilkey, Kelly Greenewald. I mean, really, really nice series for kids who are starting to read.
It's like entry-level horror for
kids. Yes.
I mean,
I think that's really cool.
I was just going to ask you guys if you had read Alvin Schwartz's Scary Stories when you were younger. Did you guys do that?
I did, yes.
Really? Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. I don't really remember reading those, but
I remember getting those, and then it was like a sleepover activity. So you have those books and a flashlight.
Oh,
yes.
And then Now and Later Candy. And this is revealing my sort of 80s, you know, past. But you have all this candy and these books and terrify each other. And frankly, the illustrations were like the scariest part.
Yes, they were. Yeah,
I agree. I totally agree.
Really intense. Like, wow. So yeah, that was so much fun. Such great memories of those books.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reviewing Scary Stories to Tell in Dark earlier this week, and I was kind of struck by like he gives some instruction. Okay, now do this, take a flashlight and jump, you know, to your right or something like that. And, like, that's kind of a neat thing, but it was, they're not that scary, but maybe in the right situation.
It's funny. Some of them have stuck with me.
Yeah.
Not a lot, but just a couple. And I would also, I probably am comfortable saying I read more horror than both of you, but I would also not consider myself a horror reader.
Okay.
And it's sort of more of a byproduct of being kind of a sci-fi horror specialist for the system.
Uh-huh.
So I've kind of had to branch out. I've found stuff that I love, but I'm not particularly into gory horror.
Okay.
That said,
yeah,
I would say one of the best horror books I've read in a long time just came out this year, and I went out of my way to read it because I am absolutely love the author, and that's Stephen Graham Jones. Mm-hmm. He's an Indigenous author, a screenwriter. He's done anthologies. And I've talked about, I think, maybe a couple of his story novellas as well. But he put out this spring, The Only Good Indians. And it is a pretty creepy revenge tale, basically. It's just one of those, a group of four friends go hunting on the Red Reservation in an area they know they're not supposed to be.
Hmm.
And it comes back and bites them really bad.
Ooh.
And it's just, it is a commentary on contemporary Native life, the people who live on the res, the people who live off the res. It's just an interesting, and how people see them, how they see themselves. But it's also just a creepy, and in this case, I would say gory, horror story that if you like that kind of thing, go grab this book. I am not a big fan of this kind of thing, but I really like this book. Okay. Though I probably skim the worst parts, I will admit. It is one of those things that I did not want to read it during the day in any way whatsoever. Or, I'm sorry, during the night. Yeah. I wanted it to be a bright, sunny day when I was reading it. And unfortunately, it started that way, and I kept reading it. It was really dark and creepy when I finished it, which was not helpful at all.
Okay, back to candy corn.
Exactly.
The reason I mentioned the Alvin Schwartz scary stories is because I did pick up Don't Turn Out the Lights, a tribute to Alvin Schwartz's scary stories to tell in the dark. And this is edited by Jonathan Mayberry. And there, I think there's something like 35 authors that give a selection, that write a selection for this collection of short stories. And I immediately went to read the Luis Alberto Urrea and Rosario Urrea entry. And it's definitely lighter fare than what you just mentioned.
Certainly.
This is a JF, maybe a tad bit scarier than, you know, the Shadow in the Woods and other scary stories. But I like them because they were very short entries and not that scary. Not that scary. I mean, spiders in someone's head, but also some commentary.
That's kind of scary to me.
That's a little scary.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe a little bit.
Sorry. That was scary. No.
When you read that entry, you'll be like, oh, okay, this is a little silly. But I appreciated the commentary that in a lot of the stories, you see these themes of kids getting bullied because they're different in some way, or from another country, or something along those lines. And I just found them to be very readable. So I hope you'll pick that one up. And like Cheryl mentioned, the drawings in the Alvin Schwartz's books, the cover to this book is way scarier than any of the stories inside. Don't Turn Out the Lights, edited by Jonathan Mayberry.
Okay, because I was curious, I pulled up just to see a list of who the authors were. There's some great authors on the set.
Absolutely, yeah.
Michigan author Josh Mallerman is in there, who wrote Bird Box.
Yep.
Madeline Rue, Sherilyn Kenyon, Tanana Reeve-Dew.
R.L. Stein.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cammy Garcia. Really.
It says all ages appeal.
Yep.
I'm thinking, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm very curious about this one. Okay.
And the nostalgia angle too. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, actually the back cover is pretty scary too, now that I'm looking at it.
One other one that I think people might pick up. There was a debut out this year called The Patient, by Jasper DeWitt. And it's kind of the lead into this is that you have a young doctor, a young psychologist who's taken a job, young, overconfident psychiatrist. And he takes this job and it's this gothic setting, and, you know, sort of hospital on a hill.
Oh dear.
Yes, exactly.
This can't go well.
No, it can't. You're right. It certainly cannot. And the tagline for the book is, you know, every person who has treated Joe has had a mental breakdown.
Oh.
Huh. But still the young doctor thinks, but I can be the one.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
So there is comeuppance. it's interesting because it's told kind of in hindsight, and he's sort of saying, I was an idiot. And it's actually in this sort of a series of blog posts, which makes it kind of bizarre and interesting. DeWitt is I think he's a screenwriter, but this is his first novel. It's not really long. But it's basically him talking about this experiences of working with this patient. And, you know, he has his own beliefs on what happened, and he's got all these people kind of, every once in a while he's responding to comments about what he's experienced and what he's saying. And it's just, it's a really nice blend of psychological thriller and actually, you know, kind of existential horror too. It has that added twist to it that is it real? Is it not real?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
It feels like it was real and there's something else out there. So yeah. It's one of those stories. It was very good.
Which, I don't know if you read The Silent Patient, but would you say it reminded you of that at all?
I actually haven't read The Silent Patient.
Okay.
Oh, I know. Yes, I haven't read it, so I'm not sure, but it is, I almost want to say, is that Michelides or something?
Yes. I think it's Alex Michelides, maybe.
I almost want to say he has the cover blurb.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think they're definitely selling.
Yeah, there's some similarities, but
yeah,
it sounded interesting. I might pick that one up.
It was interesting. It really is interesting. And it's disturbing. Obviously, because that's the point. But it was an interesting put together story that way. What else have you got?
Yeah, Cheryl, what are you reading?
Well,
different kinds of horror.
Yeah, I'm probably out of the three the least horror reading, I would say, out of the three of us, which is interesting because as a child, my favorite books were about horses, dogs, or like scary books. I loved them. I consumed them. And I had favorites. The Thing at the Foot of the Bed by Maria Leach, which is based on really scary old folk tales. Mm-hmm. Then Jane Emily by Patricia Clapp. I read that book over and over, about a girl getting possessed by a dead girl from the past. I loved these books. The Stonewalkers, I think it's Joan Aiken. It was like these huge stone statues come alive. And
were you a Mary Downing Hahn reader?
No, and I think I was a little too old.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Then in high school, I loved horror. I liked, you know, Helter Skelter, true crime. I don't know if you can believe this, knowing what I read now, but I read a bunch of Charles Manson books. I don't know. But then all of a sudden, I, like about 20, it was like terrifying. I could not read any of it. I can't watch the movies. I don't read it. I don't want to read it.
You change. It's true.
Yeah, I change.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I've a little bit been accused of, and if accused is the right word, but I can look at things that are real and horrifying and read them.
Nonfiction.
Yeah. And I remember having a conversation with a colleague once about The Last King of Scotland, the movie. And the colleague said, I would never watch that. And I was like, oh, but I would. Really? You know, we had this conversation, but I won't read horror. I won't read, I don't know. So,
see, and I'm much more comfortable reading the book than I am.
Me too.
Having seen that movie.
Yeah.
That's horror to me.
Yeah.
That's a different,
I was just
kind of
thinking
horror.
Of all those like Halloween movies that were popular in the 80s and 90s. Yes. I didn't watch any of those.
Mm-hmm. See, and I did in high school. I could watch those, but now I could never watch them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And watching is scarier than reading, I think.
Definitely.
Reading,
yeah.
You can turn it off. You can close the book. You can walk away. You can go outside, you know, but when you're watching something, I think it's just like very intense.
Mm-hmm.
But, I did pull in something that is pretty horrific for this conversation. It's called Cold Pastoral, and it's a book of poetry by Rebecca Dunham. And this book of poetry is it's pretty stark, and it's really an elegy. The whole piece of work is an elegy to people and to place. People and places and environment that has been affected by certain environmental catastrophes. So the key, most of the poems are centered around the Deepwater Horizon oil rig explosion. Mm-hmm. And she writes in this way that pulls in, you know, her first person thoughts about the environment, about the catastrophe, about being a type of person who can't look away. And really what the poems do is they cause you, they have you look right at these disasters and not.
Right.
Right. So she laments about how, you know, we hear these things on the news and they're, you know, we have different reactions, you know, horror, and then we sort of move on. Whereas the people who live in those areas, fishermen whose livelihoods are affected, the families of those who died can't move on. And the environment really hasn't moved on in the way that, you know, perhaps the company executives would want us to believe. And that's really what is about. Yeah. So it's there's some pretty horrific passages in it. It is beautifully written. You know, the title's sort of a play on words, a cold pastoral. That's from a poem. I believe it's a Keats poem. And she really works with this idea of a poem or a photograph capturing these sometimes horrors and then replaying them again. And the poet captures these words. And then if you read the poem, then you're reading them again. And the words and the thoughts and the crisis and what we can learn from the crisis can echo on and on. And I think that's really powerful. I really like that. Mm-hmm. She uses a quote from a poet, Muriel Rukeyser, in the beginning of the book. And this is from Muriel Rukeyser from the Book of the Dead, who wrote, "Carry abroad the urgent need, the scene, to photograph and to extend the voice to speak this meaning, voices to speak to us directly." And it's a very intimate work of poetry. It also has a poem about the Flint water crisis in it too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and some about Katrina. So I recommend this work. It is by Milkweed Press, Cold Pastoral by Rebecca Dunham. Okay, so that one's really dark. And it sort of ties into the book that I spent the most time with in the last month. This is a book I purchased a couple years ago. I don't know if either of you have had this experience where you know you want to read this book so much that you just like wait a little bit.
Yes.
Yes.
Very, very much yes. Recognize that. Yes.
Okay, yes. And then you finally check it out from the library, but you find you're too busy reading other things. You have to give it back. And then you're like, okay, I'm just going to buy this right now.
Yeah.
And
or you do start off right off the bat and you know you want this book and you buy it. But that's it does, mm-hmm. you let it sit.
It has to be the right time, right? Yeah, I picked this up and I looked at it. This book is called Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teaching of Plants by Robin Wall Kimmerer. And I just was waiting for the right time. This was not one I wanted to breeze through. I didn't want to, you know, be cramming it in so I could talk about it. And I waited quite a long time on this. And interestingly, what sort of spurred, I started it, and then I was made aware of an event by Milkweed Publications called the Book Lovers Ball. This was a free event. It was a fundraising event, but it was phenomenal. And it happened last week, and it had some of my absolute favorite authors all together. Otto Limon, I've talked about them on this podcast. Margaret Rankle, Elizabeth Rush, who wrote Rising. And it was a recorded event. And then Robin Wall Kimmerer did the keynote. And I couldn't have loved it more. You know, I know I'm a gusher, but this is my ultimate gush. This is a book, Braiding Sweetgrass. She talks about this in her segment of the event that has had ripple effects all over the world, from schools to curriculum to farms named after this. It's affected marriage ceremonies. I mean, she has this just big piece in the presentation of just gratitude and explaining all the ripple effects of this book out in the world. This is a book I've heard a lot of people say, you know, about what we're going through in this time and place in history, that, you know, we'll emerge different. You know, what changes are we going to make? What changes will we make with the way we live in the world after we've lived through this COVID experience, right? And this book really, it's one of those books where you can't read it and just go, okay, that was cool. You know,
right.
You read it and then it's a call to action.
Right.
It's a call to say, yeah, what are you going to do with this book now that you've read it? And a little background on Robin Wall Kimmerer, and I'm actually just going to read from the back because I want to make sure I have everything included in this. She's a mother, scientist, decorated professor, enrolled member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation, and she's the SUNY Distinguished Teaching Professor of Environmental Biology and the founder and director of the Center for Native Peoples and the Environment. And this book here, it's a series of essays. It's a combination memoir, science writing, and retelling of Native stories, and they center around the environment, also about her being a mother, about her being a scientist, and about her being a Native woman, and that intersection of all of those pieces. It's a really hard book to make a summary for. It's a hard book. She even talks about this for bookstores to figure out where to put it. Mm-hmm. Is it ecology? Is it memoir? Mm-hmm. Is it essay? Mm-hmm.
To all of those. Yes.
Yeah, right. It's all of those. And a couple things that it's a book you really have to read yourself, and a book that once you read it, you want to give away to other people. And I think it's a book that can make sort of a paradigm shift in people's lives and how they interact with each other and how they interact for the environment. It was written in 2013, but it couldn't be more timely for right now, for what's going on with our relationships with each other and with the earth. And I can't really summarize a plot because there isn't one, but a few things that I did want to try to summarize it with are some quotes from the author. One of them is that all flourishing is mutual. And this book is really about reciprocal relationships between ourselves and the environment, between pieces of the environment and each other, about restoration of our society and our environments through relationships. And it's also about the power of story and the stories in this book and the stories that we have in our families and how we reconnect to the earth to really heal our world and heal our relationships with each other. So it's pretty deep and it's beautiful. It's really hard to put into words. So I highly recommend that people pick it up and read it. There's a brand new edition that's come out. We have many copies in the library if you're interested. So that's Braiding Sweet Grass. And then the last one that I have, it kind of ties into the call to action. It's actually a picture book, so I'm going a little lighter here. It's lovely. It's called Welcome to Your World by Sumitri Prasadam Halls and illustrated by Jamie Kim. And this is one of those, you know, beautiful animal sort of centered books where you have a parent child of an animal, mother child, could be father child, all over the world, from, you know, the ocean to the forest to sea turtles and orcas, eagles. And there are many picture books like that, and they're lovely and sort of warm and sweet. But the difference in this book, it really made me think about both books that I talked about, because the difference in this book is that it ends asking for really a call to action, which you don't usually get in a children's picture book. And it says, welcome to your world. It loves you through and through. Welcome to your world. Will you love it too?
Oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. And
yes.
It's so interesting how much that ties back to Braiding Sweet Grass, because Braiding Sweet Grass talks about a way of relating to the world that is not the way that many of us were raised in our Western society. Right. And this is a different way of thinking about things. And if we can start perhaps thinking about things differently with children, what kind of a world can we create? So,
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I kind of went from horror to something really redemptive, but it's taking, yes. But it's not just reading and going, oh, that's so nice. It's saying, okay, what does that really mean? You know, what am I going to do differently?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Do differently in the middle of the pandemic.
But yeah, there is that part of it too.
More yes. pressure. But no, it's just, it was kind of a life changer. I think that's why I waited to read it, because I knew that would happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are books that are, yes, totally that.
Yeah.
Are there any kind of on these topics that we missed or that anybody wants to kind of go back to?
Well, I'll just mention The Mystery Writers of America Presents. It's a Life is Short and Then You Die. This is also a collection of short stories edited by Kelly Armstrong. And, you know, I have to say that I really like short stories, especially when it comes to mysteries and I guess horror to a small extent. Just because it's something I can read at night that's quick and, you know, it's all wrapped up and I'm not spending, you know, weeks and weeks on it. But yeah, this was an interesting collection. Again, lots of great authors in this one. A lot of YA fiction in general, not always, but they kind of have to do with like first experiences. Your first relationship, you know, your first job, big trip, you know, all those sorts of things. And this one is actually about a teen, you know, your teenager's first experience with homicide. Hopefully not. So these are fictional stories, of course, that are, you know, based on, you know, the mysteries of who did it types of things, or can I do it sort of thing. The first story, Floater, it was, I think, kind of tame. And it's about a teen who ends up in a lake, and she has to figure out, you know, who caused this floating experience. But the last one, Six Ways to Kill Your Grandmother by Barry Lega.
Oh my.
That was so creepy for me, for my sensitive reading brain. You know, it's the son of a serial killer. It was very creepy. And I don't know. I was just like, I didn't like thinking about some of these things. But anyway, that's that collection. It's a Y collection. Mm-hmm. So it's a little stronger on the, mm-hmm. the scary, creepy, gross sort of stuff. And there's a little sarcasm in there.
That's really, it's kind of unique, isn't it? I mean,
it is. And again, short stories you can usually do in a sitting. So, yeah. Like that.
Wow. So I have one more that I thought about talking about, and it's called, and for me, I think Cheryl might've hit on it earlier in the podcast, but it's sort of that cozy. I don't read a lot of cozies, but every once in a while I do. And one that I've read recently is called A Spell for Trouble. It's by Esme Addison, and it's her first book. And it's again, because I'm drawn to weird combinations. it is a cozy. The lead character's name is Alexandra Daniels. She's going back to a small town where her mother is from. It's just off the water in North Carolina. Her father has just died. She was invited to join her aunt and cousins for a little while. She hasn't told them that she's quit her job, so she's come and she's trying to figure out what to do next. And it's all fine and good. She decides to stay with them for a while. They run an apothecary shop in the community. But of course, it's all going great until her aunt is accused of murder. She's accused of poisoning somebody from her past to happen to storm into their apothecary shop. And of course, since it is an apothecary shop and poisoning was the cause of death, then obviously her aunt must be a prime suspect. But it's one of those kind of, it's a cozy with a paranormal twist. And at the heart of this actually deals with folklore and magic based in legends of mermaids, of all things.
Ooh.
And the story is actually based in the legend of the Mermaid of Warsaw. So it's a very strong Slavic magic mythology that she's developing.
Cool.
All of it put together. So if you add on the background of Esme Addison is a Black woman married to a first-generation Polish immigrant. She has her family's blessing in doing these stories, but it's just sort of a... So we've got, you know, the cozy element, the paranormal element, the Slavic heritage element. It's all kind of rolled in together. It probably shouldn't work. but it was fun. It was an interesting story, and I'd be curious to see how it develops.
Is there a magical realism type piece to it then with like...
There's a bit of water-based magic in being used. Okay. So it's an interesting, strange story. And I think she might've been like an actuary or something like that in her job. So it's totally, totally opposite of what, you know, what she ends up, she's going to, you know, the series is going to continue in the small town. So it's that sort of story where it's just getting started. So it's just one of those, it's a weird mix of light and dark. Cause it has some really interesting and funny situations, but it still has that kind of atmospheric oppressive feel to it in terms of the murder mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I'm actually reading one that I know that you have read, Jessica. so we're going to talk about it when I'm done. But it's called The Mason House, a memoir by T. Marie Bertineau. And this is a Michigan memoir written by an author who grew up in the Upper Peninsula. And it really spoke to me because she grew up about 10 minutes south of the town where my parents grew up. And I have never read, especially nonfiction, you know, literature set in that area.
Right.
And so it's just, I'm loving it so far. I don't want to say too much. I think we'll probably talk about it in a few podcasts together.
Yep.
So The Mason House by T. Marie Bertineau, excellent Michigan memoir.
How about you, Maddie?
I am reading, or really actually listening, to Junk Boy by Tony Abbott. I'm listening to it because it's actually not here yet in print. We do have the digital copies, but I wasn't able to read the ebook because someone else had it.
This happens a lot, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's narrated by Kirby Hayborn, who is he's definitely done a lot of YA and other narrations. He does a great job, but if you can, I recommend reading it. It is a novel in verse, so it's really quick, and it's in some ways, actually in a lot of ways, it's just very heartbreaking because it's about a young man. He's about 15 or so, and he's living with a dad who could basically, you know, care a rat's blank about him. Mm-hmm. He lives in the woods off a trail that's been converted, you know, from a rail trail. We have some of those in Michigan.
Yep.
So it sounds lovely when I read about him, you know, walking home from school or reading, listening to his descriptions. But his yard, it's just filled with all sorts of junk, you know, discarded things that don't work anymore. And unfortunately, there are kids in his school who bully him because he's different. He's a loner. Mm-hmm. But what this story is more really, it is about poverty, but more so to, you know, I see just how much neglect can influence how a kid grows up, you know, the isolation, you know, when you have no one who's paying attention to you and no one who's engaged with how you're growing up or what your education is like. And so he's alone. And it is bleak, especially initially, but I think that there are lots of slivers of hope in the novel because he does meet a friend. And it's just fascinating how when someone invests in your life and acknowledges you, mm-hmm. how much that can influence your future outcome. So I really, really am enjoying this book and plan to read it when the physical copies come back in too.
I'm currently reading...
That's a YA book.
Oh, yep. Sorry. Currently reading Eat a Peach. Restaurateur David Chang.
Yeah, I heard about that one.
If you're not familiar with him, he's the Netflix show Ugly Delicious is and he's the owner of the Momofuku restaurant group. Mm-hmm. I kind of chose to find the audiobook because he reads it. I've heard him interviewed a lot, especially he's a big champion for the restaurant industry in this pandemic. And it's been very interesting hearing him. So I wanted to read or hear the book. And some of it's tough reading. He's very blunt about his belief in hard work. He doesn't think he really has talent as a chef, but he really works hard at it and it's what he wants to do.
Grit factor.
He also is very blunt about his mental health issues. He's for many years, he's becoming a star in restaurants, but he was undiagnosed with bipolar disorder. And so you've got these really scary scenes where you realize, you know, he's kind of lucky to be alive.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it's sobering, but it's also, he's very self-deprecating. It's interesting. I think it's really great to hear it in his own voice.
So that's kind of the reason I decided to go with the audiobook on this one. But yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
And I believe the physical copies are finally coming in on that one too.
Yes, I've actually had it once, so I know they're here.
Okay, good.
Yes, yeah, I've had it. I had it. I ran out of time.
That was one I was really worried about because it was taking a very long time. But
yeah, it did. Yeah, it did finally come in. Good. Okay. Well. Okay. This has been a really fun listen. I love being able to talk to you guys. Sometimes we don't actually see each other very often.
Don't.
No, we don't.
So thank you both. I do have one reminder for everybody, and that's that, just so you know, in addition to contactless pickup, Cattle's now offering computers by appointment. So if you want more information about that, please click on the link that's going to be provided in the episode description. And you know, anybody who needs computer access, we're trying to get that to people. But otherwise, it's lovely talking to you ladies, and we'll be back again next month.
Yeah. You as well. Happy reading.
Yes.
Weekend. Yeah.
Yes.
Next
enjoy
week.
Enjoy that sunny day.
Yes. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Hi, I'm a professional magician here to tell you about the most magical places I know. Your Capital Area District Library. Download, stream, or check out great entertainment for the whole family. Your favorite movies, TV series, music albums, and more are just a click away. A Cattle membership can save you hundreds of dollars a year in free services. Get yours today and let the magic begin right here.